Hi, today is December 19th, 2015, and this is Mobile Views Podcast number 142. I'm Todd Ogasawara with my good friend John Westfall, and today we've got another good friend, Don Sorcellini. I hope I pronounced your name right, Don. I've only known you like...
Close.
Yeah, I've only known you like 10 or 12 years, so you know, I'll get it right one of these days.
I prefer the pronunciation of Sizzolini.
Sizzolini. That's
my personal favorite.
John actually knows the backstory to it. My name, and it's a family tradition, has been mispronounced for several generations, and possibly in my lifetime, the best mispronunciation was during a junior high school phys ed class with a substitute teacher who stared at my name and in front of 30 people proceeded to yell out Sizzolini.
Wow.
And that was at the time Sizzoline was still sold as a product, just to date things. And I've never seen 30 kids hit the floor laughing simultaneously like that. So it's Sorcinelli. It's you can tell it's obviously Lithuanian in its nature. It's led to some fun ones. The latest being actually a year ago, my oldest son in a hockey game in an arena was the first time his name was ever introduced, and it was completely mangled and totally expected. He even looked up to the stands as if to say, you know, yeah, there it is, family tradition just continuing on.
Yeah, so I guess you never want to be introduced by John Travolta at the Academy Awards.
I was actually figuring he might nail it because he was so far off he would actually come a full 360 degrees and actually get it right.
Well, in preparing for this show, I did think that if we ever did a radio show with the three of us, we could just be, you know, the Doctor, the Walrus, and the Sizzolini or
there
something like that.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, my favorite mispronunciation of my name is Ogasa Walrus. In fact, I have a domain name all saved up for that because I liked it so much. But in any case, anyway, we're going to run through a couple things, and we got a bunch of questions for Don, who is an enterprise mobility specialist. We're not quite sure what that means, but it sounds really, really cool and makes him sound really smart. So we're looking forward to this. First thing I wanted to mention is that I did another article, Extreme Tech, and this one is about Wolfram's new Open Cloud. It's called Wolfram Open Cloud. And basically, if you want to try out the Wolfram language without having to install it or anything, you just create a free account, head over to just look for Wolfram Open Cloud in Google, and you'll find it. I can't remember the URL. But it's in my article. I'll link it to the show notes. And check it out in your browser. Wolfram language is pretty amazing. Stephen Wolfram calls it a knowledge-based language because it actually has links to data, to real-life data that you can pull out in the course of calculation, so you can do some pretty amazing stuff with a single line of code. For those of you old enough, and you got to be pretty old, it harkens back to APL, except APL didn't actually have the data built in. But in any case, item number two. Had an interesting experience yesterday. In my office, I noticed my Nexus 6 said it didn't have a connection to my watch. I looked down at my wrist, and sure enough, I didn't have a watch on. It did say that it was a couple of blocks away, and that was, it was last seen a couple of blocks away, 2 hours previous, which would make sense because that's when I was walking into the office, and that area is, I remember kind of holding my camera up to take a picture of the sky, and it was quite plausible that I would have, if I had not strapped the Moto 360 watch on, it might have fallen off. So I ran back there.
Or it just tried to run away.
There you go.
And that was its moment to try to make its
right
break.
It had a chief sentence. Mm-hmm. By the way, Don and John and I, one of these days, we want to do a Conspiracy Views podcast. But that's another story.
Yeah, we Conspiracy have Views so. 77.
That's right.
You know, 76 and earlier are not available.
So the Moto 360 could have achieved sentience. It's possible.
Yeah, Todd, my feeling on it was when I first saw that you had said this was, When something's last seen does not necessarily mean that, it's actually willing to report it back. So, you just have to take it with a grain of salt. I personally think that it was playing tricks on you.
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, Don, you are 100% correct because I spent that day kind of annoyed, having lost a relatively new watch. I only bought it in July or August, I think. So it's not even, half a year old. And so I came home, and lo and behold, it was sitting in my home. So the last scene was so way off, it wasn't even close. It was 10 miles off.
was the watch face mocking you? I understand.
Was there a bill for the cab fare waiting for you to pay it?
Maybe. Well, you know, it's like if you look at YouTube, there are these videos of dogs and cats catching the bus. You could have caught the bus. The bus stops
If you notice that the number of steps you took just doesn't match up, you realize that it itself took those steps.
Right.
I would have thought it would be more slithers for a watch, but you know.
But you know, speaking of achieving sentience, so Google is really annoyed at apparently, I think it's California's Department of Motor Vehicles, requiring that driverless cars have a steering wheel, pedals, and a licensed driver. And they're saying it slows it down because, you know, of course, they want to achieve, you know, Skynet. They're already late, right? Skynet was supposed to go online, what, 2006 or something? So they're, you know, they're almost a decade behind with Skynet. It's in autonews.com, and I'll link to that, too.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. As a person who's been heavily involved with Android for a number of years – And knowing the issues that can happen with an Android device, there's one thing I want to do, and that's to have a vehicle moving at a high rate of speed that I have absolutely no control over, and count on an operating system potentially that tends to have a lot of issues with memory.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. Oh, I need to do garbage collection.
We just a couple of minutes ago were talking about your watch and its ability to forget where it was, yet I'm supposed to trust my car to get me to where I need to go. When I saw that and I had actually seen that piece and I thought to myself, you know, maybe in a generation from now we can have this argument, but you really want to go down this road, you know, today,
literally,
so to speak. Yeah, yeah, literally and figuratively. You know, Google really wants to pick up this battle. It's going to be a hard. It's going to be a hard case to make.
I agree.
I don't really think we would ever want to have a situation without any kind of control interface to be able to, you know, manually interact with a machine around us. I mean, even, you know, I'm trying to think. It's very hard. I guess elevators are the only sort of machine we don't have a manual control ability of. But most machines we like to at least have something manual to.
Well, and you know, for many, I think, and I can't remember where I read it, but I think I remember the first automated elevator with, you know, no elevator operator was very controversial. People were very, you know, anxious about this whole idea of getting into elevator with no human being behind the buttons or whatever it is, a crank, whatever it is back then.
Yeah. I don't know. I have reservations. It's even as a person who goes to, you know, who's been to Disney World on occasion and things are, anytime somebody says, yes, this is a totally automated system, I immediately start looking over my shoulder, looking up, looking down, going, where's the nearest exit? In case of emergency, when all else fails, what do I do?
And
punch the mouse squarely in the nose. That is at Disney most of the way to fix the problem.
And they have had a couple of problems in the past. Nothing fatal, I think, in terms of the monorail and things, but there have been a couple of, you know, there's always some crazy things going on the rides, but not the monorail.
John jumps in quickly to note the fatalities.
I do know for a fact there have been fatalities on Walt Disney World monorail, and not that I orchestrated them or anything, but
I vaguely
remember reading about
really
this
on the monorail. Interesting.
And this is what makes John the life of the party, just to let you know. He can cite the fatalities in just about any kind of event. It's always what makes it so much fun to be around with.
November 1st, 2011, fatal Disney World monorail crash caused by employee error. Flawed Disney policy. Told ya.
See, if it was automated, there'd be no error.
Sure. And thanks, Don. I am the life of the party with these strange, wonderful cats. I should send you links on Amazon to the two books that I'm reading for my one class in the spring on human factors engineering, because both of them are filled with these wonderful, sad stories about human error and massive fatalities and crashes and everything else. And the second book, this is way off topic, but the second book, the first story I read in it, kind of ended on a happy note. And I thought, oh, well, some of these are actually good stories. And then I read another story, and it was about an airplane incident where, you know, it just got progressively worse and worse and worse. And you're thinking, wow, how are they going to pull out of this? This is just, I've read 10 pages of everything going wrong on this aircraft. And then page 11 is like, and they all died.
Oh.
And you look at it, you close the book, and you go, I guess not all the stories end on a happy note. And then after reading both books now, most of the stories do not end on a happy note. So, you know, it's a sobering moment to bring it back to Google. We really need to, you know, think about these things, because there's a lot more tragedy than, you know, happy, uplifting stories of adversity, I suppose.
There is a point in that. And another happy Google story. And this one is actually good, although I'm kind of sad. Project 5, for those of you who don't know, Google launched their own cell network using using Sprint and T-Mobile. So if you're on a Google Fi network with one of their supported phones, the Nexus 6, 6P, 5X, they're basically an MVNO, and you pay very low fees. I am on the Google Fi network, and I'm very happy with it so far. I have a couple of gripes, but one of the more interesting things that just happened that made me kind of sad is Google's Project 5 just added the ability to add about five LTE enabled Android and iOS tablets to your plan without any extra fee. All you do is pay for whatever data they use attached to your plan, which is pretty amazing for those of you who've ever wanted to put a tablet with LTE on your, you know, on your standard carrier plan. And the reason I'm sad is I just bought a Wi-Fi only iPad Mini 4, which is one of the supported devices, the LTE version anyway. So I was just thinking, wow, if I just paid a few dollars more, but oh well. And of course, it will only work with the T-Mobile side of the Project Fi network, because it doesn't support the Sprint side. Probably, you know, the frequencies they use. Okay, so that's the kind of the roundup of things that I found interesting, John and I found interesting. So we got a bunch of questions for Don. And John, you have the first question.
So we introduced you, Don, as a specialist in enterprise mobility. How do you get the enterprise to move at warp speed, and how far are we away from transporters?
Yeah, it's we just make it so.
There you go.
Okay.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, every once in a while, when you work with mobility, the people that you tend to work with get the joke with the enterprise, you know, and all the innuendo and double entendre and everything associated with it. Now, unfortunately, the people we tend to work with who aren't in mobility but use mobility don't get it as much.
Yeah, the people who are paying you to be there don't quite get the actual jokes. That's
right. And they don't find much humor, especially when it's on the clock.
We're not paying you to be funny, Mr. Sorcinelli.
That's right. That's correct.
But you get the funny along with the productivity. There's no way to detach the two. So my first actual question was, so all three of us met in our storied past through our mutual sadomasochistic relationship with Windows Mobile. And
which I liked back then, by the way.
Yes, it wasn't as bad then. I'm curious, Don, what is your daily driver these days, and what are your thoughts kind of on Windows Phone?
Oh, it's interesting, because what I do for a living requires me to work with all the platforms. Mm. So I honestly, if you open up my bag there, you'll find, although it's quite old, you'll find an old iPhone, you'll find a couple of Android devices, you'll find a Windows phone, you find just about everything. I keep a rabbit in one of the other pockets too, so I can pull that out every once in a while. My daily drivers currently, it's sort of split Android and Windows phone. I still love Windows phone on the email side. And this comes back to sort of the enterprise side of things. A person who's been tied at the you know, at the hip, the waist, every place to exchange for so long. Mm. You know, it just is, it's still the male client experience is great there. Android, I've just loved. You know, I do like iOS. I'll be honest with you, the interesting thing for me is that iOS, I work with it all the time. Personally, especially now that our models in the U.S., which is one of many things that are changing, you know, that we're starting to get to less subsidized devices, you know, iOS has been sort of a luxury item that I just haven't been able to afford. My kids, ironically, my oldest son has a 5C. My younger son has an iPad mini. You know, they get to use that stuff, and I get to use the more cost-effective Android solutions. But yeah, I move between all of them. I love them all for different reasons. And like I said, I still have I still have an affection for whether it be masochistic or not. I still have a love for Windows Phone for certain aspects too. I've also worked with Windows 10 not only on the mobile side but on the tablet side as well, and you know, there's aspects of that I like too. There's aspects that drive me crazy, but I could say that probably for just about every platform. When you work with them all every day, you seem to find every annoyance and nuisance.
I can imagine. So what? Go ahead.
I was
John.
Just going to say that does seem to be. I think as your work requires you to, you don't get the luxury of falling into the trap of saying this platform is better than that platform, utilitarian, you know, across the board.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me because I've always been the guy telling people when they say, well, what do you use? I go, well, I use this, but use whatever works best for you. And people not really respecting that. So next time they don't respect when I say that, I'm just going to send them to you.
That's fine, yeah. Because then they'll talk to me and they'll be completely confused. And,
oh, yeah.
whatever they thought they were believing in previously, I will have them completely baffled by the end.
Well, yeah. I already annoyed someone this week and said, I know, you know, we have these ancient by standards of today, but Dell computers at our desks at work. And I just don't use mine because it doesn't work very well. And the Windows 7 images that they're pushing down just are not optimized at all. So one of my coworkers came to me one day and said, you know, I know you don't have this problem. You never complain about your computer. What do you do? And I said, I just use my own MacBook. And they were not too happy to hear that my solution to the corporate problem was just not using the corporate computer. But, you know, you got to go with what lets you get your work done at some point. And
yeah. Yeah, it is. You know, it's to a certain extent, I've been a believer for a long time, and we're seeing it more and more on a daily basis in the enterprise. It's whatever works best, and there's a few factors that always come in when you're talking about IT in the enterprise. So what works best? Is it that it's does it meet the need of the end user, and does it meet the need of the enterprise from a security perspective, from a business driver perspective? But the bottom line is that we've got multiple mobile device platforms that all have strengths and weaknesses, and depending on the vertical market you're looking at the users, at the goals, the business goals as well as the personal goals. You know, I could go to 10 different businesses and probably find 10 different solutions, whether they be all one platform or in some cases multiple platforms that work. That's the biggest challenge that exists today. I mean, when we look back when we were all together, guys, for the first time, you know, and I can remember, you know, at that time, basically it was primarily a two-horse race when it came to mobile devices in the enterprise. It was Microsoft with Windows Mobile and RIM. And there were very distinct lines between the two. Now we've turned, you know, all these years later, and we've got multiple platforms, all these platforms performing different different things, different functionalities, different price points, you know, the different form factors. Man, it's, you know, it really does depend on what a business needs to accomplish. But the first rule of thumb, I think, in most cases for the enterprise nowadays is that, you know, don't preclude or don't assume anything going into making your decisions with your platforms. You know, you've got to deter, you know, you've got to think things through and analyze it. Don't say that we're going to be an iOS shop. I don't know. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, personally, I don't know of any businesses that I've worked with in recent years that are 100% one platform anymore. Those days are gone.
So Don, I know that, and I was going to use the word also, but that might not be correct. I know you are a mobile developer also. I guess I did use the word also, but you are a mobile developer. Is that something you're still primarily doing, or is it more on the you know, kind of the design and analysis and all that of the enterprise stuff itself rather than the software running on the device?
I am more the implementation engineer now, and the architect, than I am the, you know, for the enterprise solutions than I am the developer. I still do development, but it's more for trying to stay on top. Think of it as hobby, but almost a necessary hobby for me. I honestly believe you can't truly understand these platforms unless you, to some extent, have some familiarity with, you know, the inner workings. We all knew that. We all, in one way, shape, or form, mm-hmm. years back, we loved to tinker with things. And I still, with from a programming perspective, I still try to stay on top. But no, the company I work for, Tango, is based out there. The corporate headquarters are in Orange, Connecticut, but we have offices all over the place. I happen to be – my offices are in Eastern Mass in the Boston area. In addition to – originally they were a telecom expense management company. They basically, you outsource to them for that. Now it's become more of a technology expense management company. They've looked at all the different things, taken their knowledge and expertise in telecom expense management for enterprises, and they're expanding it. But at the same time, we also offer managed services. I was actually brought into the company because of my knowledge across platforms in implementing mobile device management solutions. And at that time, it was primarily the Tango had their own mobile device management platform. That's expanded now. MDM has become enterprise mobility management. Now it's not just about device management. It's about application management. It's about content management. It's all changed tremendously. And I'm involved from soup to nuts, from initial design, consulting, implementation, installation, training, technical training, things of that nature when it comes to all those products. So it's fascinating, and it's there's never a dull day.
Todd won't tell you this, but I will remind you, this is a rated G podcast, so those soup to nuts references that you're making, I don't know what that sexual innuendo is you're getting at there, but you know, we got to cut that out, you know, for the younger listeners here.
John, you know me too well.
I have a two-part question for you, Don.
When did you start developing malware in your spare time, and how much money does it really bring in? Because when you said your development was out of necessity, that was kind of what I was thinking we were going towards. Yeah.
No, this is turning into a conspiracy views, obviously, right now.
But anyway, my two-part question was, one, how much in your experience, you know, looking at many companies you've interfaced with, how many of them do you see, or what proportion do you see of them that allow their staff to do bring your own device to the party? And the second question is, if your company allows you to bring your own device and attach it to the enterprise, what warnings or cautions or just general advice would you give them before they decide to do that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, for a while, all the buzz phrase, you know, the buzz acronym, so to speak, was BYOD. I'll tell you, to give you some idea, just in the last couple of years, this has changed an awful lot. Even 2-3 years ago, the challenges for an enterprise when it came to this BYOD strategy was, number one, how do you stop people from bringing their own devices in? you know, and attaching to your resources in the corporate network, whether it be email. It's not just email. A lot of times it's the content that's the big issue, you know, file shares and documents and things like that. And you know, how do you stop them? And then, you know, more importantly, how do you, if you're not going to stop them, you know, how do you really manage and set forth, you know, from a policy perspective, how do you enforce it, whether it be verbally or whether it be through technology? A couple of years ago, the challenge was everybody that wanted to go BYOD, interestingly enough, when we consult with them, you know, they'd say, we want to bring it in. And what we'd find a lot of times was it seemed like this was going to be a very cost-effective solution for the business. You know, they're bringing their own devices in. We're not having to pay for the devices per se. We might be having to pay for data access or things like that, but it seemed to be cost-effective. But the technology was still kind of evolving. The other big challenge that would come in is, okay, so we do let them attach to email. What happens when they leave the company? And a couple of years ago, you know, everybody who worked with Exchange knew the solution was, oh, we issue a remote wipe, which is sort of absolute. Yeah, bye-bye to your email, but also bye-bye to all those pictures. How things have changed from a BYOD perspective when it comes to these enterprise mobility management solutions are, number one, that a lot of them are including proxying technology. So the days of somebody coming in backdoor and manually configuring email, they're configuring to endpoints that are being proxied and monitored through mobility management solutions. And until you enroll, you can try to connect, you won't get to those resources. So you have to enroll in device management. That's number one. Number two, with BYOD, what's happening, and the good news for the end user in this, if I'm now telling them you can bring your own device, but you've got to enroll in device management, the good news now is that these solutions are able to containerize data, be more intelligent, so that if I do leave the company, my email goes, maybe the applications that were installed go, maybe documents that came from file shares, those go, but my personal stuff still stays in place. So the good news is, as long as you're what I tell end users, you know, because I get this too from people, you know, I work with companies, but I'll have friends and other associates, and they'll say, well, you know, this company, my company is now allowing me to bring my device, but what's the risk?
Right.
Well, the good news is if they're using the proper solutions and technologies, the risks are a lot less than they used to be. If anything, in some cases, there really isn't the risk that used to exist. They're going to install software that allows corporate data and the personal data to be truly segmented, compartmentalized, containerized is the common term used. And when the time comes, if the time comes that I have to remove corporate data, I'm not risking my personal data in the process. That all being said, it's interesting. BYOD was all the rage. The technology is now existing to make it really potentially work, but I'm still not seeing it totally taking off because you're still dealing with a lot of the more abstract issues with BYOD of who pays for what. You know, if it's a personal device, but I'm using it for business purposes, am I expecting the company to pay for my data access? You know, so you start to get into all these issues, and these aren't necessarily hardline technical issues. These are more like, you know, these abstract business issues that have to be dealt with. The other thing too is there's still the policies that no matter how much technology you apply, there's still business policies and practices that have to be dealt with as well. You know, around great, it's on your personal device, it's containerized, but you still, and you can't copy it, you can't send anybody place else, but you still shouldn't be showing it, you still should be protecting the device, you should make sure you don't leave it in a taxi, things of that nature. So
don't let it jump off your wrist and slither away to the governor's mansion.
Don't let the vehicle go joyriding with no steering wheel and brake and accelerator. You know, those kind of things.
Hey, I have a question for you, Don, since I'm kind of curious about this. Obviously, I don't attach my device to our enterprise, mostly because they told me not to. But, Well, actually, I could.
Well, you can't keep track of your devices, so I can see why they told you that.
No, actually, I could.
Watch developed sentience and ran away from you a couple days ago. There are wise people in your enterprise that are telling you not to connect your devices anywhere near their servers.
How is the MDM type stuff handling the biometric type things that are available now? The Windows Hello stuff, the Apple's fingerprint, and the more recent Android fingerprint readers.
Great question. I will tell you, the good news is it's a lot better than they were handling it a couple of years ago again. The problem always has been, and we know it, I think, from being around technology in general, and especially with mobility, because of the nature of the secretive Apple and Google and Microsoft with keeping it close to the vest. The problem always was the third-party vendors having to keep up with the changes in technology. The good news is that I will say all the major players are working with the major players in mobility solutions to make sure that they are staying more up to date. So when I release functionality for iOS, in a major release like iOS 8, it should not be far behind, if not day zero support from your third-party providers and enterprise mobility management solutions. Like I said, we used to call it MDM. Now we call it EMM because it's not just about the device management. That's a big aspect to it. But you'll hear EMM mentioned a lot, and EMM really encompasses device management, application management, and content management. These changes are constantly occurring. The good news is that these EMM providers are usually close to day zero, if not day zero, for being able to support them. The challenge becomes the enterprise again in saying, okay, from a business perspective, how do we want to deal with some of these changes? I think the biometric is an example of, it's a hardware change that, okay, we're just going to allow it now, or we're not going to allow it. But some of these as changes happen with content management, for example, or application management, you suddenly say, geez, do I start to craft my applications, my mobile applications, to take advantage of this? It's great that the EMM platform supports it, but in a way, this may also affect my content strategy. It may also affect my application strategy. The challenge is still, when it comes to mobility, it's that it's so fluid, and how do businesses handle it from a not necessarily a 10-foot level, but sometimes a 5,000-foot or a 10,000-foot level, from a strategy perspective.
Yeah. So would you say it is, maybe I won't use the word likely, but possible that if somebody brings their iPhone or Nexus 6P or something else with a fingerprint reader in, they may find that if they attach to their enterprise, with permission, that they can no longer use their fingerprint to log in because that's not allowed?
It's possible. And a good, solid mobility strategy for any enterprise revolves heavily around communication. Companies that I work with, when they're looking to implement an EMM solution, we spend an awful lot of time working with management on what are the policies going to be, how are we going to set up those policies, and then how are we going to communicate everything clearly and effectively to end users.
That's the key, isn't it?
I give you the classic example is compliance. And a big aspect now with these sophisticated solutions are the ability for the platform to determine on any of a number of levels what makes a device compliant. And if the device isn't compliant, what do we do? One of the most common things, you cut off the resources. You suddenly can't get your email on the device. You suddenly can't access those file shares. Or applications maybe that are using VPN tunneling to internal resources, they get cut off. That's fantastic, but what you really need to do with that compliance strategy, if you're going to implement that, we typically work with customers to say 45 days in advance, send out a communication. Here's what we're going to be doing in 45 days. If you're not following these rules, if you have these applications installed, that's another one. You know, certain applications are installed or certain applications aren't installed. If you don't meet the requirements, we're going to cut off your email. Hmm. 30 days prior, another message. Mm-hmm. Multiple messages really, truly articulating the experience. The other thing we typically will recommend is most of these solutions have basically terms and conditions, or, you know, terms of service when you enroll. State your policies very clearly in those so that people know. It's all about communication. In the end, the last thing you want is for an end user to say, I didn't know this, and for them to be valid in saying it. You know, if you over communicate and they say, I didn't know this, and you can point to, here's the 10 times we told you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you were listening to you know, Adele's latest while you were reading and you were distracted, you know, but you just have to make sure now, you know, like anything else, that you just communicate effectively.
As long as your communications actually cover most of your users. I had a weird issue a couple of weeks ago. I won't tell the long, drawn-out story because I have a question that I'm much more interested in the answer in. But it was basically someone, corporate IT, saying everyone has to do X, and my account was set up incorrectly originally, so I couldn't do X. And then I had to deal with corporate IT telling me I was wrong until they sheepishly had to admit they were wrong. But anyway, that was one of those funny issues of I had gotten about 20 email reminders and thought at each one of them, well, I can't do this. And turns out I was right. This is just me talking about how right I am all the time.
Of course.
Unabashedly. So, Don, you talked a little bit about apps that wouldn't be compliant in policies. And since you've worked with a number of companies, I'm curious, what are the frequent offender apps that companies go, we cannot have these on our devices where our data is also on this device?
Wow. This is the no two businesses. It's sort of like the no two snowflakes are the same. You know, one area where it's really become interesting is traditionally, you know, companies will say time wasters, you know, and you have to have the echo chamber when you say it, the time wasters.
Yes.
Yeah. So social media comes to mind right away. However, so many companies now are really encouraging at the same time their employees to leverage social media to promote the corporate brand. So, you know, I will say typically the two categories are social media as a time waster, and then the second area is foul and most foreign cloud storage, you know, that's not managed. You know, yeah. Because that's where I could potentially take all my corporate documents and push them to a Dropbox, and now suddenly Dropbox, the user's account gets hacked. Again, good, solid technology solutions in the form of VMM solutions exist today that, number one, can restrict where, if a corporate document comes in as an attachment, what you can do with it. And it can, you can do a lot on the device, but keep it from going off the device someplace. So again, even those types of solutions, and again, with, as I say, containerization can keep the business stuff from not crossing the line and getting into the, you know, the personal cloud storage. It really comes down to those are the two categories. It depends on the types of solutions, how strict people are implementing them. It's there's no cookie cutter to those as to what's the perfect answer. It really comes down to, and why I spend such a lot of time, such a large amount of time doing this. You know, I spend a lot of time with customers talking through these situations, talking through what they're going to implement technology-wise, and therefore what they can or can't allow as a result. What you're trying to do is close loopholes, you know, make things are safe.
Lot to think about. I'm glad I don't have to.
That's what they pay for, the headaches.
Yeah, I'm glad that I just have to deal with students who don't listen to anything I say anyway, so it doesn't really matter. I guess my life isn't much different than a consultant in that regard, where people don't listen to you even though they're paying you for the information that you provide. And, of course, when you talked about talking with the customers, all I could think of was an Office Space reference of talking to the customers so the engineers don't have to. So thank you for taking the bullet for the engineers
yep.
on that.
Absolutely.
I guess my other thought, and I talked about this a little bit in the email that went around, was I remember hearing stories, and I have no idea how accurate these were, that what really kind of killed RIM, other than the fact that they kept clinging to an operating system that looked like it was programmed in, you know, behind the Iron Curtain about 40 years ago, was that people were coming in with these fancy iOS devices, and the execs and the corporations are going, we got to have iOS support. And all of a sudden, all the nice policies that you could do with RIM and everything else were kind of going out the window. And at that point, Apple's policies were pretty much in their infancy on what you could do with an iPhone. So I'm curious if there's anything today that is kind of shaking up your view of the world because the bigwigs on top like it and they want it to go on. And enterprise mobility is going, wait a minute, we don't want to do this yet, or we don't have the ability to do this yet.
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting because I think we've hit a period of stability, relatively speaking. Interestingly enough, I think where the change is coming and the technology is there, but companies are starting to have to wrap their brains around this a little bit more. Microsoft and Apple especially, but and Google, I shouldn't say it. Google's actually doing it with Chrome as well. Suddenly the lines are being blurred from a device management perspective to where we always used to talk about computers and then mobile devices. And they were two separate platforms, how we managed them, how the enterprise viewed them, the tools we used, the ways we did things. They were totally, there was this clean, distinct line. And that line suddenly didn't get blurred. It sort of got erased in the last year, OS X, with what's been introduced from a device management perspective and the similarities to iOS, and then Windows 10, where, quite honestly, from a device management perspective, Windows 10 and Windows 10 Mobile can be managed using the same device management platforms. And the EMM providers are right out of the gate supporting now. Suddenly, we don't just support Windows 10 mobile devices. We're going to be supporting Windows 10, whether they be notebooks, PCs. And they're going to be applying the lessons learned from mobile device technology, which I'll be perfectly honest with you. I find, as somebody who had been around things like SCCM in the past, I find the approach that mobile device management has done to managing devices to be a lot more flexible and also intelligent, more modern. And now those solutions are able to do it. And as I said, if you look at any of the major players today in enterprise mobility management, they're not talking about devices anymore. You know, they're talking about, you know, they're not talking about just the small mobile devices. They're just talking in general about computing platforms. And that's fantastic, but it's taking companies a lot. You know, it's basically shaking IT to its foundation in some regards. It's people are always used to doing things a certain way. We like the status quo, and to suddenly say, wow, we're going to treat our notebooks, our tablets, maybe even our desktops the same way we treat our phones, is just the concept really boggles the mind. And I think that's going to be a big change in 2016. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see – you're just starting to hear about it, but I think you're going to see it an awful lot. It's going to be an interesting transition. Again, you're not losing – I always try to remind those folks in IT, you're not losing your knowledge and experience. You're going to be changing how you're applying it. But yeah, it's a big change.
Well, and I think it's also a little bit indicative of certain shops and certain organizations I've been in. There were gurus back in 2000 to 2010 that really knew the device or the, you know, desktop and notebook policy sorts of setups you could do. But some companies, I don't think, ever really rolled those out fully. I've been in, you know, places where there was no group policy set up on any of the Windows machines, even though there really should have been. But yet, at the beginning of the device revolution, they at least realized they needed a need for device management. So they would have something for that. So it is kind of interesting now where you might have these shops that have never really locked down anything on the notebook or desktop side saying, oh, maybe we should start doing some of this stuff.
Yeah. It really has. It's the good news is, I guess to say is I always dreamed of a day when we started to treat all these computing platforms as peers rather than such tremendous disparity in how we thought about them, how we managed them, how we implemented and rolled them out. I always dreamed that this day might come. It actually is getting there. So that's a good thing.
Until sentience happens and all the computers kill us.
That's my prediction for 2016.
It might have already happened. They're just in planning stages, you know, meetings, that sort of thing.
That's where your watch had to go.
That's
yesterday.
Right. Okay. So I am going to go see some movie called Space Wars or Star Force or something like that. So, one last thing before I head out the door, suggested.
Yeah, this was my thing. So, we have kind of a running joke for those that do not know us very well that Don and I are very evil people and we've done evil things in the past. And at one point, I mean, the highlights of this were sitting around a lobby in a hotel and talking about stealing the essence of a mobile phone, which was, of course, its SIM card. And then, that really scared some peers that were sitting around with us when they heard that conversation. At one point, when Foursquare was big, I set up Cobra Command next to Don's house and then stole the mayorship of Don's house from him for a while. That was an evil thing. But I was thinking some of the companies that we've been watching this year, they've been doing some evil things. Apple, in my opinion, was evil by not providing any kind of third-party watch faces for the Apple Watch. That kind of frustrated me. Microsoft was pretty evil with the OneDrive. Yeah, you can have unlimited. No, you can't. And maybe you can have some of it, but not all of it.
Even though you're paying for it.
Yes, even though you're paying for it. And yeah. Google Fi, as Todd found out, will destroy a Google Voice account. And thankfully, you were able to save your Google Voice.
I was.
Jason Dunn found that it destroyed some of his Google Voice or something like that.
Yeah, so, actually, your number disappears and all your archives are gone.
Yeah, so my prediction, I'm curious of all of us what the predictions of evilness in 2016 are.
Let's let Don start off.
And then okay. I'll have three of mine, so we'll see if Don picks any of mine.
Okay, so my first evil prediction is that Microsoft will release and pull back on every operating system at least once a month for the calendar year, and it'll just become sort of a game at, where there'll be an announcement that says yes, we've released it. Oh wait, we've stopped.
Yeah.
My Google is that. They will start actually going out to cars and installing their functionality and removing whether or not you like it, they will remove the steering wheel and the brake and the accelerator.
Or maybe just the brake. They'll do it in sections, so the brake will be gone one day, but the accelerator and the steering wheel will still be there, and you won't realize it. Yeah.
Yeah, and Apple will release another watch, another phone, another tablet, and then release another watch, another phone, and another tablet as quickly as Microsoft is releasing and pulling back on software updates. So all those people who continue to purchase new technology will go, "Hey, I've got the latest." Oh, not now.
Oh.
So there's my big ones for the big three.
All right. John, why don't you hit the
I also did the big three. Mine, I actually tried to think of things I could really see happening, which was hard because I have a flair for the dramatic, and I wanted to do some of the things Don did. But I tried to also pick things I thought could conceivably happen, even though they would be super evil. Microsoft, my prediction is, will retool all of its phone efforts into a Surface phone, and will then try to turn the Surface line into a lifestyle line and talk about, hey, you've got the Surface phone and the Surface book or the Surface tablet, and this is all you need in life. Who cares about those pesky apps? You don't need them. You just need this. And all Windows Phone products will either be discontinued or become bastard children that are never supported, never updated. I mean, that's kind of what they've done now, but,
haven't we become used to that?
Yeah. I mean, Microsoft will continue doing the evil things they've done.
Well, can I ask you a question? Will they, when you say that Surface lifestyle line, how long will the name of that product line actually be? Because I think that's, if it doesn't have at least 6 words in it, I don't think it'll ever
fall. I predict it will actually be short. It will be called the Surface Lifestyle, but people will confuse that for a brand of condom, and it will get very, very hard for Microsoft to brand it appropriately.
Oh, okay.
And Google. Google will kill off Google Voice or Google Keep, or both, just because that seems like an evil thing in their line of evil things they would do.
Are either of those in beta? When you mentioned that, Google Voice, did it ever get out of beta status, or does it still have the beta label?
I don't know.
I don't even know if Google Voice ever officially had beta status. It was just kind of like, hey, we've got this thing called Google Voice.
Because, yeah, my opinion is, if it's anything from Google, if it has the beta label for more than a year, it's dead. It's, sooner or later, they're going to take it away from you. That's usually what happens. They leave it as a with the beta label for a certain amount of time, and it's their secret code for saying, at one point in time, we're just going to take this away without you even knowing about it.
And you will cry. But
yeah, I do not see beta on the Google Voice page.
Then it's safe. Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. John.
It just hasn't had any updates in 5 years, but it's
a long time.
Yeah. And then Apple will indeed remove the headphone jack from the iPhone 7, but they'll pitch it as necessary in order to have a waterproof iPhone 7, and we'll be really annoyed by it. But the joy of being able to push people into pools again will save us from being too annoyed.
Okay. So for me, again, with the Surface Phone idea, I think they will come out as Surface Phone, and despite their Microsoft's claim that Windows 10 is the kind of a last Windows, then they'd just be iterations of it, Surface Phone will be totally incompatible with Windows Phone 10. So no apps will run on it unless they're newly written. Google, similar to John, you know, and this I'm afraid is true. You know, they're already fussing around apparently with Google Hangouts, which has currently the ability to send and receive text messages, but someone was just looking at some code somewhere, and it looks like it might disappear from Google Hangouts. And of course, Google Voice, as John said, has just been languishing and stagnant for a long time. I depend on Google Voice heavily, so I really hope it doesn't disappear. But Google has done some pretty evil things with some pretty nice products, like Google Reader, for example. And Apple, it's not so much evil as, well, maybe it is evil, but you know, I don't believe in corporal punishment, that sort of thing, but I believe public flogging should be brought back for the Apple iPod development team, because that thing is getting worse and worse. And in fact, John finally convinced me to just dump it entirely and go to Marco Armand's Overcast.
You're talking about the podcast, not the iPod Touch.
Not the iPod Touch, podcast player, which, you know, started off okay and then got steadily worse, and now it's unusable.
Speaking of Overcast, Marco Armont never responded to my tweet about the mentioned last week when I reinstalled. I had bought the premium version of Overcast, He decided to go to a sponsor only. And I said, hey, when I restore my purchases, I still see do you want to be a sponsor blurb? And it's kind of annoying since I bought the thing back when you could. And he never responded to that. So I suspect he's not unhappy that I'm annoyed, which means that I will have to set up a Cobra Command next to his house and steal his house on Foursquare.
There's one of those evil predictions for 2016.
All righty. Okay, so that brings us to the close of MobileViews podcast number 142. I want to thank Don for taking the time out of his busy schedule on a Saturday evening to talk with John and me. I know you've got family and holidays coming up, so thanks a lot, Don. Really enjoyed having you. Learned a lot, so...
Mm-hmm. Oh no! Thank you. It was great being on. I've enjoyed. You know, I've known you guys both for so long, and I enjoy the podcast. So it was really a pleasure being.
What? Somebody listens to this? We didn't know that.
That is an amazing thing.
Well, I'm basically doing my research so I have stuff to hold over your head at a later point in time. But hey, a number's a number, right?
Yeah.
There's one listener for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll definitely want to have you back for both this and for our, our hypothetical conspiracy views odd podcast someday.
Or Or is it hypothetical?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're not seeing.
It might be actual.
Well, I'm more than willing. Anytime, let me know.
All righty. That brings an end 142. Thank you, folks. And I think this is the last podcast of the year unless something comes up.